Thanks for joining us for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. If you have a small yard, or even if you live in apartments, you can still get into composting, and our next guest can tell you how. With us today, Michelle Baltz. She is the author of two books. One's titled No Waste Composting. The other is titled Composting for a New Generation. She also writes a blog. It's titled Confessions of a Composter. Michelle also teaches classes on backyard composting. So as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Love to hear from you and maybe your efforts to compost. Would you like some advice? What questions do you have about composting maybe in a small place? Join the conversation. You can give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Michelle Baltz, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Larry.
You call yourself a compost fanatic. Why are you so passionate about composting?
Well, so I find it absolutely fascinating that and just really empowering that you can take things like banana peels that people normally think of as trash, and you can turn it into your a beautiful homemade compost. It's a wonderful crumbly material that is, you know, any gardener will tell you that it is one of the best things you can add to your soil to help your plants. I just find the whole process really fascinating. In fact, my Instagram handle is Compost Geek because I just love to learn all about the different techniques. And I just find so much satisfaction in putting the materials in and then harvesting the finished compost. It's almost like baking your own bread or, you know, making a homemade quilt. You're making your own compost at home. I love it.
How long have you been doing this? How did you get involved with it?
So I've been doing it for over 20 years. And, well, if you count when I was a child composting in my parents' garden longer than that, but on my own at my own house for a little over 20 years. And I started because I work for a local government down here in Ohio, and we were giving classes on backyard composting. So we're in a waste district where we're trying to reduce waste going to the landfill. And the more I learned about composting, the more fascinating I found it. So I started a blog to kind of put all those ideas in place. And then that led to a publisher reaching out to me and asking if I'd write a book. And I was like, sure, that sounds fun.
Well, Jeff in Door County already has a question for you. Jeff, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi, guys. So I built a compost bin out of some pallets like probably 3 years ago. And I haven't turned it in those 3 years. And I'm wondering, is it even something that I can regenerate or?
Yeah. What's gone into it, Jeff?
Various clippings from the garden, trees. I've got about an acre and a half up here, so it's all different kinds of stuff. And I put soil in there as well. So, but no food.
No food. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't turned the compost pile in a few years now, and wondering what he can do to kind of rejuvenate it maybe.
Yeah, you know, that's the great thing about backyard composting is it is very forgiving. So you likely have, it may look like on the outside it hasn't done anything, but if you dig down into it, I bet you have finished compost that you could harvest in the center of it. That there's still micro, biotic activity that's happening in the center of that, compost bin. And so what I would do is, pull the material out, right? Anything that's not finished composting, it's usually the stuff that's on the outside since you haven't been turning it, you know, move that, continue composting. But I bet once you dig in there, you're going to find some really beautiful compost on the inside.
I would think after 3 years, I think he said that there's got to be some good compost in there. What really, you know, you mentioned microbes. What's really the science behind composting? How does it all work?
You know, there are microorganisms that do most of the work. So bacteria, fungi, and there's different types of bacteria at the different stages. And it's all about, you know, backyard composting, well, composting happens naturally. Decomposition happens naturally. But composting, you're putting it in a container and you're trying to control it, just like in gardening where you're controlling what plants grow where. And so by putting it in a container, you're controlling the moisture and the heat and where all that stuff is decomposing. And so as it goes through the process, it'll heat up a little bit, and different organisms will, by, you know, mostly at the beginning, it is the macro organisms, so the worms and the, you know, beetles and the bigger bugs. And then as it heats up, it's a lot of the bacteria breaking it down. And at the end, you'll notice you see still kind of woody material. The fungus is what will get that. And the fungus takes the longest amount of time, which is probably why the caller, you know, you're going to see some really beautiful compost because you've let it sit there for a few years. it will eventually break down all of that woody material as well, but that takes longer. But really, it's just a process. As long as you're keeping those microorganisms happy by giving them enough water and air and food to eat, then they're going to keep churning out some beautiful compost.
Mike in Algoma has a question for you. Mike, hello.
Yeah, good morning. It's a crazy question, but it's basically why. Why do we need to put green and brown material in a compost pile when all green material turns brown if you leave it long enough? What's going on?
Okay, that's a good point, Mike.
Yes. So it's really all about the balance of nitrogen and carbon. And it goes back to those microorganisms again. They need both materials in order to get the energy that they have, but also to reproduce and to create new, basically, cells. They have to have the nitrogen and the carbon. And when they just have one, I mean, anything that you put in the pile is going to have some level of nitrogen and some level of carbon. So it will eventually decompose, right? As long as it's an organic material. But, you know, wood is going to have a lot more carbon. It's going to take that longer to decompose. Things like leaves will have a little bit more nitrogen in them. So they will eventually decompose and it'll be fine. It just is slower. So if you add food scraps, for example, if you have a leaf bin and all you want to add are coffee grounds, which are actually high in nitrogen, despite being the color brown, they are high in nitrogen, you will turn out really nice compost. It will have a great balance of carbon and nitrogen, and you don't really need to add any other food scraps to it than those coffee grounds. So it's really just getting that balance. You want about one part nitrogen to two to three parts carbon, and you'll get the fastest possible decomposition.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say it's a speed question.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be faster if you add both.
That's right.
Okay. Bonnie in Mesa, Maine has a question or comment. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I have a question, too. I've got an outside compost bin that I keep turning, and it still turns out pretty slowly. I'm looking at either food mills or electric composters for the kitchen so that mm-hmm. I can kind of pre-process material from the kitchen, not protein stuff, but just, you know, the coffee grounds and peels and vegetable matter.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if you have any advice on that.
Yeah, so they, listeners aren't aware, there are some devices out there that you can buy for your kitchen. They're basically like pre-composters. They're not actually composting in them, but they grind up the food scraps and dehydrate them. And it turns it into a material that kind of looks like soil, but it is not. It is just little tiny pieces of dehydrated food scraps. But it is pre-processing it, and that will decompose faster in a compost bin. It will also be less likely to attract rodents if you're worried about that. So it will work faster. It's especially nice if you have a tumbler that's up off the ground and you're trying to make compost really fast. They are kind of expensive. And like I said, you do need to still compost them afterward. So just be aware that it's kind of a pre-processing step. I've never personally used one, but I've talked to other composters that have and love them, especially if they have a really small backyard and they're trying to, and they kind of feel a little icky about the food scraps. It helps take that ick factor away.
Okay, Bonnie. How expensive are those, Michelle? Those electric...
I think they're a couple hundred dollars. Yeah, it's not cheap. But it can be a nice device if you're into gadgets.
Well, and I think I was looking through some of your information online, and you do talk about cutting things up or chopping them up a bit as a way to get things going a lot faster. You can use a knife for that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. If you've got things like watermelon rinds, it's good to chop them up a little bit. Your pumpkins, before you put them in there, I usually throw mine on the ground, maybe stomp on it just to break it up. The more broken surfaces you'll have, the faster those microorganisms are going to eat it, basically. So if you want it broken up, that's the best way.
You've got lots of different ways to compost. What's the in your book, for sure, what's the simplest way to compost?
So I think the best way, if you're starting out, is to buy one of those, black plastic compost bins that sit right on the ground. They're open to the earth. Some of them look like, Darth Vader helmets.
Mm-hmm.
But the black plastic, buy two of them. And I think that they're nice because they hold in moisture. Some of them have locking. Most of them have locking lids. And it's a good way to get started. I like to say fill it up about, a foot with shredded leaves. And then every time you add food scraps, cover them up with more leaves. So I have a wire leaf bin next to the black plastic bin. And the reason I say two is once you've filled up one, you can just leave it to do its thing and then start on another one. And you don't have to try to be messing with the food scraps that aren't quite finished.
And that's relatively inexpensive, too. I mean, in order to get started.
Yeah, and some communities even have compost bin sales where you can buy them a little, less expensive. But yeah, I think that those are really the easiest way to get started composting. Unless you want to start with just leaves in a wire bin, then maybe that's a little simpler.
So I notice as I have friends and so forth are going through the neighborhood that you'll see the compost bins. Most of them are in the far back corner of the lawn. Is that the best place for it? I mean, people just want it out of the way.
Yeah, and that's funny because that's where I have mine, but I have a pretty small backyard. And it's on the other side of the fence of my neighbor's compost bin, so that works out well. But, I feel like you want it within easy walking distance of your house, so it depends on how big your yard is. But you don't want it so close that, there are going to be bugs. So, there's going to be things attracted to it. So you don't want it right up against your house. You also, if you have a wood fence, you don't want to put it up against your wood fence because it will start to decompose the wood fence. So you want it a little bit away from that. But as long as it's an easy walking distance, I think you'll be fine.
And what about those folks who live in an apartment? You say they can do some composting.
Absolutely. So in my second book, No Waste Composting, I actually spent a whole chapter talking about ways that you could compost indoors or on a, fire escape or small patio, because I got a lot of questions about those methods. So, there's the vermicomposting with worms, which is, the most longstanding kind of indoor compost method. And that is a fantastic way to compost. In fact, you'll get the highest quality compost that you can make at home from the vermicastings or the worm poop. But not everybody wants to have 1,000 worms in a little bin in their kitchen or their basement. So I did research some other methods, and those are highlighted in the book. One of them is really cool from India. They're terracotta pots that stack on top of each other. And you want to do it out like on a balcony or a patio, but you don't need a yard. And you use coconut coir, so like the fibrous material when they make coconut milk and, you know, in the coconut. It's a nice carbon material, because another problem that people in apartments have is they don't have a bunch of leaves that they can compost. They've got the food scraps, but they need the carbon material. And so that acts as your carbon material. So I tried to pull together a whole list of different options for people.
One of the methods that I saw was relating to keyhole gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Describe a keyhole garden and how it works.
Yeah, so a traditional keyhole garden is going to be one that, if you imagine a circle, and then it has a little notch cut out of it so that you can walk to the center of the circle. And these were developed in Africa, in really arid regions of Africa, where they were having, you know, they have water shortages, and they still want to grow vegetables. And so they'll build a wall, so it's a raised garden bed, and in the center is a compost bin. It's usually made out of wire material, something that is going to, you know, be able to mix with the soil around it in the garden. And so you plant whatever around the compost bin. You put your food scraps and brown materials into the compost, but then you water just the compost bin. And the compost bin acts as a way to then, you know, water all and give nutrients to the plants surrounding it. So really interesting idea, and something that I got to build when I was writing the book, and it was a lot of fun. And you can build it out of stone or pavers or bricks, or I even saw one built out of old wine bottles, which was interesting. But you can pretty much build it out of what, you know, whatever your imagination lets you try to find, you know, an idea of.
I thought the photos were pretty attractive. It was unusual and pretty attractive at the same time. I loved it. Michelle Beltz, our guest today, author of two books, one, No Waste Composting, and the other, Composting for a New Generation. And she writes a blog titled Confessions of a Composter. Questions? There's an open line. Get you on pretty quickly here at 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Talking about composting today with Michelle Baltz, the author of two books, No Waste Composting and Composting for a New Generation, and her blog, Confessions of a Composter. Nancy in Appleton emailed, she collects vegetable scraps to make vegetable stock with. Are these still valuable to compost after cooking, and is the addition of salt problematic?
That's a great question, and I actually do that as well. I make stock out of my old vegetable scraps. I keep them in a bag in the freezer until I've had enough, and then I throw them in a pot, and then once you've boiled them, they're actually going to decompose faster. So they're great for the backyard bin. That little bit of salt that you put in there is really not going to affect the bin too much. I mean, salt isn't something that you want to be adding a whole lot of to your backyard compost bin, but the amount that, you know, we would like to eat is fine. It's good. That little bit of salt isn't going to matter in the backyard bin, and they will decompose faster.
Jerry in Oconomowoc has a question. Hi, Jerry.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Michelle, I'm in southeastern Wisconsin, and it gets pretty cold here in the winter, and I've been garbage can composting all summer with holes in the plastic bins outside. And so I've just gotten a bin in my garage and a heating pad on it and 500 red wigglers. any hints for me on how I can speed up that compost process in my garage?
You know, I would say try to keep those red wigglers as happy as possible. And, you know, they can eat half their body weight in food scraps a day. And I know when you start out the bin, you don't want to feed them that much. They need a little bit, you know, they get a little shock when they first get into a new environment. But as long as you're keeping them, the right moisture is really important. They need to be a little moist. You don't want them to dry out. But they also can't, you know, they're not aquatic. They don't want to be completely covered in water. So you need to make sure it's the right moisture. And I would also recommend not putting a lot of citrus peels in there. I've noticed in my worm bins that if I add citrus, that for some reason these little white bugs start growing in there. And I don't know if it's the pH or what, but I just haven't had a lot of success with citrus in worm bins. But other than that, they can take pretty much any food scrap, and they will end up churning out some really nice finished compost.
There you go, Jerry. Thank you for calling. Dennis in Mauston, we turn to you. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, good morning. First-time caller, long-time composter. So I live in central Wisconsin, and our soil is extremely high in phosphorus. And it was always a problem growing things in the garden. So I decided to start doing raised bed gardening. And my raised beds are basically what I call living compost piles. In other words, as I'm growing in them and throughout the year, I'm constantly adding kitchen scraps, grass clippings, ground up leaves from the previous fall, compost from my compost bins. And when I recently had a soil test, and I expected my NPK was going to be perfect, it came back with my phosphorus extremely high. Any thoughts on why that's happening?
That's a good question. I don't know much about the Wisconsin soils and that high phosphorus. We don't have that problem here in Ohio, or at least down in Cincinnati. I do know that, so one of the methods that I talk about in no-waste composting is about using, taking a raised bed and doing Kugel culture in the bottom of it, which sounds a little similar to what you're talking about, where you kind of line the bottom of a pretty deep raised bed with woody material and then manure, and then you put your regular soil and compost and things on top of that and grow on top of that. And what that does, I think, would create a little bit more of a barrier between that soil that you're trying not to grow in and the, you know, the nice amended soil that you're growing on the top there. It also very slowly over decades breaks down, and so it acts like a sponge and helps keep that. But I'm not sure if maybe there's food scraps that you're adding to the compost that is kicking up the phosphorus. I'm not really sure.
Well, it could be. You know, you're growing in high phosphorus soil, so maybe those plants are a little higher in phosphorus as well to keep that phosphorus level up. Dennis, there you go. Thank you for calling. Mike in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hi, Larry and Michelle. We have a lot of maple trees in our neighborhood, in a small backyard. So, but there's a lot of black spots,
some tar spot
disease on our leaves. And so, is it okay to use those in the compost, or would that cause harm?
You know, I think it's better to keep those out of the compost. You know, not knowing exactly what kind of disease that is, you don't know that your backyard compost is going to get hot enough. Commercial composting likely would kill any of those diseases, but you'd have to get up to 140 degrees in your backyard bin to make sure that you killed all of that, and you just can't guarantee that. A lot of backyard systems don't get that hot, and so I would air on the safe side and bring that to a commercial composter.
Yeah. I know tar spot is pretty cosmetic for the maple trees, but, you know, that. So whether or not that would have an impact, I'm not sure either. But you can, as Michelle says, maybe you might want to err on the safe side for something like that. And Natalie in Green Bay, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Natalie.
Hello. So I live in an apartment, but I am lucky enough to have parents that compost. So I save my food scraps and bring it to them. The compost kind of food prep container that I bought came with compostable bags. And I'm just curious, is that actually something I should be using? Because I notice when I bring the bags, when I bring another bag, the old bag is still there. And I just feel like it's maybe not breaking down as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of products out there that say they're compostable or biodegradable, and I do air quotes when I say that, and they don't break down. Now, there is, and this is not sponsored, but I have noticed that there's a brand called BioBag that does seem to break down pretty well in a backyard bin. My sister-in-law years ago gave me a present of some compostable bags, and so I've been trying them. And it took probably 2 years for those bags to break down, and they were pretty annoying while they were breaking down because they were just kind of like shredded pieces of plastic in my bin. So my recommendation, unless it's a bio bag, is to, you could use it as a liner, but just treat it like a regular plastic bag and just empty the scraps into the compost and then throw away the bag.
Natalie, thank you so much. Michelle, thank you so much. Will you come back and be with us again? It'd be really fun to have you back.
I would come back anytime. Thanks for having me.
Michelle Balt's our guest. Her books, No Waste Composting and Composting for a New Generation, and her blog, Confessions of a Composter. And thank you for listening, and a big thanks to our producers, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnaud, our technical directors, today, Trina LaSousa, but also we have Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening to Garden Talk, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.